Then, one blazing night in the summer of 514 BC, on the eve of the great Panathenaea, as he hurried across his father's square, Hipparchus saw two men pushing their way towards him. One, Harmodius, was the handsomest man in Athens, in the full splendour of his youth, while the other, Aristogiton, was his lover. And Hipparchus, who had an aesthete's eye for beauty, had attempted to split the couple for his own predatory ends, and thereby mortally offended them both. Dreading the power of the tyrant, the two lovers had been biding their time, waiting until a festival such as the Panathenaea, at which everyone wore swords, when they would have their chance. Now, with Hipparchus before them, and with his bodyguards distracted by the crowds, they cut him down. That was the limit of their conspiracy. Harmodius himself was killed on the spot. Aristogiton, although tortured for a few days, revealed nothing of any broader plot. Yet could Hippias afford to believe that the two assassins had acted on their own? His brother Hipparchus, after all, had been murdered because he had abused his power, and the whisper on the streets was that he had been the victim, not of a crime of passion, but of a heroic blow struck in the cause of freedom. Hippias began to grow paranoid. With the ebbing of his confidence, the balance his family had long orchestrated with such delicacy was fatally upset. Despairing, the bereaved and panicky Hippias began to rely increasingly upon naked terror. Executions, previously carried out in back rooms, were soon washing the city in blood. Repression bred conspiracy. Conspiracy led to further repression. The pretense that Athens was anything other than a police state began to seem a savage joke. Hippias hunkered himself away among his foreign mercenaries as though he were some alien despot, as though barely Athenian at all. Yet who was there to dispose of him? All eyes turned to Cleisthenes, who duly materialized, jackal-like as ever, on the northern frontier of Attica. Presented with the opportunity to throw out Hippias, however, the Athenians signally failed to take it. Resentful of the tyranny, though they had become, they were hardly more enthusiastic about restoring the Alcmaeonids to power. Cleisthenes, his invasion force annihilated by Hippias's mercenaries, had to slink back across the border. For the Athenians, it appeared, a grim truth had been revealed. The only alternative to slavery was banishment or death. Not that the irrepressible Cleisthenes himself had given up. Even as he licked his wounds, he was scouting around for fresh allies. Cleisthenes knew that he was far from the only man who wished to see Hippias fall. A quality schemer, a positively Alcmaeonid in his eye for the main chance, and far exceeding the Alcmaeonids in the resources available to him, also had an interest in destabilizing Athens. King Cleomenes of Sparta. Cleisthenes convinced him that Hippias was a menace to Spartan interests. In the summer of 510 BC, a Spartan army led by Cleomenes himself crossed into Attica. Almost disdainfully, it swatted aside Hippias's mercenaries. The tyrant fled. Athens, dramatically, unexpectedly, was free.